welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And good afternoon and welcome to this edition of News in Focus. We're glad that you've joined us. Happy Thanksgiving as we enter into the holiday week and take time to be with family and friends and break bread and give thanks to our God for the many blessings that He has benefited us with. You're listening to News in Focus, a broadcast of the Ohio Christian Alliance. I'm your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. It's my privilege to serve in this position and to come to you each week with this broadcast. And we've had some great programs recently with some of our statewide candidates and statewide office holders. And we're going to continue that throughout the remainder of this year. And as we roll into 2018 and talk about, of course, the midterm elections. Of course, big news coming out of Washington as the Republicans and both in the Ohio House and the Ohio U.S. Senate, are working on something that hasn't happened in 30 years, and that is tax reform. And it is a big agenda item of President Trump. He has just come back from a Far East trip in which, by all estimation, has been very successful as he met with the folks from the Philippines and South Korea and in China. And he is back in Washington and ready to work with the leadership in the U.S. House and the U.S. Senate to pass tax reform before the end of the year. Well, as we look at this as a breakdown today, I've invited my good friend Jack Boyle, who is the new executive director of Ohioans for Tax Reform. You've heard of Americans for Tax Reform, Grover Norquist Group, and the work that they do on tax issues for the last several decades, and not only nationally, but in the state of Ohio. Now they have an Ohio chapter. And Jack and I have worked on projects in the past together, in fact, getting rid of Ohio's estate tax or death tax a few years ago. Jack spearheaded that with Ron Alban, his good friend from Southwest Ohio, and we were pleased at the Ohio Christian Alliance to partner with them in that, and we actually got it done in something in which Governor Kasich signed into law. Jack, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, Chris. Thank you very much. I am very pleased and honored to be on your show. And let me say for your listeners, there have been a few and frankly very few consequential people who have affected positively the environment for the regular person, the normal person that works hard and pays taxes in the state of Ohio. And one of those people right at the top of the list is Chris Long, who has worked tirelessly for a couple of decades to, you know, to make this state the place that we all want to live, the kind of place we want to live in. I've been honored to work with you on various things, and I'm very, very pleased to to be on your show today. So thank you very much. Thank you for all the things that you have done over the years. And the people who are listening, they know what I'm talking about. And I'm sincerely grateful for all the things you've done. So,
well, thank you, Jack. That's very kind. And it's a pleasure working with you. We've talked about issues up and down the scale as far as the public policy that affects our state. And for the long term, I know this is something you deeply care about. We've worked on social issues together, and of course, we've worked on fiscal issues together as it relates to the family and seniors and those on fixed incomes. And again, congratulations in your new role, and I see us working together on tax issues at the State House that will ultimately benefit all Ohioans and also families, and those really getting a start in life, the next generation. I know you care deeply about that, as you have kids and grandkids coming on, and so do I, and we care about the next generation. And that's why we do what we do, my friend, and I look forward to partnering with you this next couple of years so we can really make a difference, not only here in Ohio, but also nationally as well.
Well, I agree, and I think I'm ahead of you in grandchildren. I have five, with number six on the way. Not quite on children, so you're probably going to outstrip me eventually. But it's the reason we do what we do. And again, I'm happy and I'm privileged to be able to, you know, work with very good people, just the hundreds and thousands of them, but people like you. So,
well, thank you.
Look forward to this. I'm excited about this new group too, Violence for Tax Reform. You know, I think there's an opportunity here to make a difference. To you know, this our state has struggled, frankly, with you know, some of the burdens that we place on our citizens in terms of the way we, you know, collect taxes and the things that we do, and OTR is going to be a permanent, entity in the conversation in Columbus, that whenever there's a new bill or new legislation or regulation or, you know, proposal or whatever, OTR is going to stand up and say, wait a minute, this is how it affects the taxpayer, the person that actually works hard and pays the bills. And right now, nobody's quite doing that on a consistent basis, and we hope to be that provide that role or fill that role.
So. Well, that's exactly right. And well, Jack, tell us a little bit about the new role and exactly how that's going to work.
Well, again, we are setting up an organization. There are three things that we're going to try to do, and the first thing, you know, frankly, is, as I say, to become a recognized place in the firmament of groups that have opinions on you know, policies in Columbus that say, you know, when there's a new bill, a new tax, a new regulation, a new whatever, we're going to say, wait a minute, the taxpayer. You know, this helps the taxpayer, it hurts the taxpayer. And, you know, when it comes down to it, they are the people who, when the check comes, they pay it. And, you know, so we're going to do that. Second thing we're going to do is Americans for Tax Reform has been famous over the years for their pledge. And the pledge is that we ask office holders and candidates to pledge to their, not, and this is not a pledge to us, it is a pledge to their constituents, that they will not raise taxes. Now, that doesn't mean that they can't change or rearrange taxes, raise this tax to lower that tax. You know, a broader, flatter tax is always better than a peculiar tax. For some reason or other, governments have a really good way of skewing taxes to favor their, you know, supporters and donors and penalize the great mass of us who just pay. And so we're going to try to, you know, use the pledge to level that playing field, and we're going to be talking to you know, current office holders, to current candidates, and you know, I'd encourage your listeners, when they talk to their state rep or their state senator or that person running for governor or whoever, say, "Have you taken the pledge?" Because that pledge is to them. Not to us. It's to
well,
them.
Well, that's exactly right. And of course, you know, we talk about one of the things when a bill is being considered in Columbus. It has something called an economic impact, and that is one of the reviews that legislation goes through. And I think this is going to be one of those, as far as what kind of tax impact will this have, not only for businesses but for individuals, and you know. It's interesting to have somebody in Washington monitoring it. It's a whole different thing to have somebody on the ground in Columbus, walk in the hallways, monitoring the situation. And I think, Jack, that's why your new position is going to be so instrumental in helping the cause here, so that we can really get on the road to economic recovery in Ohio for the long term. There's a lot of sectors of our state that have lagged behind the national. They watch, you know, they listen to the Bloomberg report and how the economy's rebounding, but they're not experiencing it, you know, in the Northeast corridor of our state, in some
exactly.
of the Rust Belt still, and Youngstown and places like that, inner city Toledo, inner city Akron, aren't seeing the economic recovery. But, you know, these are things that need to be addressed going forward, because we have the resources in the state, both in personnel, in education institutions, and even with natural resources, that we shouldn't be lagging behind, but we should be a leader. Your thoughts?
Well, I couldn't agree more, and you know, this is something that unfortunately we all just kind of get beaten down by this. We just sort of shrug our shoulders and say, "There's nothing we can do about it. All we can do is go out and work hard every day and try to, you know, support our families and do the things that we need to do." But the fact is, we can do things about it, and you know, through efforts of just established leaders like you over the years, and hopefully again, Ohioans for Tax Reform and this new group. You know, I've had some success over the years, and I cannot tell you how excited and happy I am to have this opportunity to really change the place. You know, it's funny, and I've told this story any number of times. I was an investment advisor. I worked for Smith Barney, and I'm not sure I'm supposed to say that, but anyway. And for years, you know, my first question when I met somebody with some assets, my first advice would be to them to move out of Ohio because of the tax situation in Ohio. And when we finally got to the point where our youngest daughter graduated from high school, my wife said, "Well, are we taking your advice?" And it's like, "Which advice is that?" And she said, "To move out of Ohio." And
aww,
it's like,
see?
"No, I like Ohio. I love it here. This is my home. This has been a great place to live. It's been a wonderful place to raise children. We're going to try to change Ohio instead of making it the place that you have to move out of." And I look at this opportunity with Ohioans for Tax Reform as sort of almost the culmination, if you will, of trying to change the environment here so that it's a place where you can live and work hard and get rewarded for your efforts and raise your family. And I mean, this is a familiar, understandable place with wonderful people. And again, I'm just overjoyed at my advanced age.
Well, and you know what? And Jack, one of the reasons why people were leaving Ohio is because of the death tax or estate tax.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
one
of
the things that really builds your resume for the position you have currently, of course, you help lead the way with other groups around the state. We were pleased to join you to get rid of, finally, the Ohio estate tax or death tax. And that's one of the credits in the first administration of John Kasich, that he actually kept that promise of getting rid of Ohio's estate tax. Your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, it was a tough fight, and frankly, your help was incredible. And I remember a lot of times people saying, "Why is the Ohio Christian Alliance involved in this?" But it was essentially, importantly, it was a family issue. And if you had wanted to invent a tax that would destroy a state and destroy the economy in a state, Ohio's death tax would have been the tax that you would have invented. It was designed, not on purpose, but the effect of the design was to drive people out of the state and to drive assets and jobs and you know, just economic activity out of the state. And so,
and that's what happened. People were going to Florida. Yep. They were going to Texas, other states. Florida, for instance, didn't have an income tax, didn't have a death tax. You know, so it was a tax-friendly state that was encouraging businesses and individuals to come and retire there. Of course, they had better weather in the winter than we did, although I do see a lot of Florida plates. When summer rolls around, they love to come north and they love to visit Ohio because it's such a beautiful place. And, you know, so that wasn't the only factor. It was the economic factor of, you know, the tax burden that Ohio had. So you've already dealt a blow to, you know, obviously the death tax. But what would be the first agenda item you have as a new organization? What is going to be your first agenda top item that you want to tackle?
Well, I'm going to equivocate a little bit on being forthcoming about that. Let me say this: it's been about 8 weeks since we've announced Ohioans for Tax Reform and started talking. And I actually would ask your listeners and invite your listeners, you know, what would you do? What's the thing that you would target first in Ohio's tax regime? Now, Ohio has a bewildering, ridiculous tax setup. We have dozens and dozens of taxes, and everybody knows about the income tax and the municipal income tax and the sales tax and the real estate taxes, but there are just all kinds of taxes that you don't realize even are there. Okay, there's the commercial activity tax, which essentially adds a quarter of 1% on top of everything you do. When the mom goes and buys diapers, she pays a quarter of 1% on top of the cost. When when a plumber comes and, you know, cleans out your drain, or when you get somebody to, mow your lawn, or go to the barber and get your hair cut. The state is there collecting a quarter of 1% on everything. And in fact, you don't know it. It's a secret tax because in the bill that set it up, they forbid businesses from telling people that they had to pay this. Okay? Now,
yes.
There are something like 18,500 tax levies that are effective in collecting taxes from people around the state at any given point in time. These are things like school taxes, sewer taxes, art districts, zoos, economic activity, community colleges, you can take any square foot, 12 by 12 inches of the state of Ohio, and you would be hard, that is not a government-owned entity, and you would be hard-pressed to find a place that has less than a dozen different tax entities collecting taxes on that 12, square inches.
And one of the things that we addressed in the last couple of years, and again, your group was, this was before you came to your new position, mm-hmm. but you as a private citizen was working with some folks about the municipal tax that businesses have to pay. Yep. And the way that was so convoluted, because in every single district there was a different municipal tax, making it so difficult for businesses to have to do their taxes. I talked to one contractor who was saying, you wouldn't believe what my accountant has to do as far as figuring out the municipal tax from one county or state entity to another, and exactly how that is really inhibiting me as a business owner to just try to move forward when I'm hiring people and trying to get things done. Yeah. It's like, can it be a uniform tax so that it makes it more simpler? What's the thought on that, Jack?
Well,
some progress, but still, there's still problems there.
Yeah, well, not much. And in fact, I'm just like everybody else. I worked in one community. I live in another. And I, paid the municipal income tax and was annoyed by it and didn't think of it. And then my youngest son, I have five kids. My youngest son graduated from high school. And in the summer before he went to college, he painted houses. He worked for one of those, student painter companies. And, I'd always done the taxes for my kids when they started going to college because there wasn't much to it and whatever. And I never thought a whole lot about it until the next January. I got 19 W-2 forms from the painting company for my son.
Oh, Lord.
Three of them were under a dollar. Okay?
Yes.
And I called the company up and said, what in the world is this? And they said, it's what we have to do. Your son painted houses in 19 different communities, and we have to keep track of how many hours he worked, where he worked, what he worked, and we have to remit taxes to every one of those communities. And it was like, this is a nightmare for a business. This is crazy. And when I started looking into it, this is the reason at times why businesses don't come to Ohio.
Yes.
And there are only four states in the United States that have local income taxes. Ohio's is the only one that is a general statewide tax. There are states that have certain cities, like New York City has an income tax, but nobody else in New York State has one. Pennsylvania actually has a kind of a bad one, but it's collected on a county basis instead of a city basis, so it's not quite as arbitrary as Ohio's. It seems like whenever Ohio has something, it's the worst. Ohio's estate tax was the worst. Our municipal income tax is terrible. Now, when you think about, an income tax, well, maybe collecting income taxes at a level of government as closest to the people as possible, where the services provided will be the most direct to the people, in other words, in the municipalities, maybe that's a good idea, okay? I'm willing philosophically to agree to that, but the just weird, strange, contradictory system that we have is terrible. And when you come down to it, then why is our state tax between our state tax is pretty common, you know, it's a little bit under 5%, and that's right in the middle of the states, except that no other state has the extra 2% that everybody pays for municipal income tax. When you add that on, we're in the worst five states in the country. And so if we have all these services being provided at the municipal level and taxes being collected there, why is our state tax so high? Mm. And so these are the issues that Ohioans for Tax Reform are going to address and are going to focus on. We're going to focus on all these weird levies. We're going to focus on the, just the pathology that the municipal income tax, that the variability of the municipal
you're income tax benefit, creates. You're going to benefit from a fantastic research group that we have right here in Ohio, and I know they're no stranger to you, and that is, of course, our good friends at the Buckeye Institute. The Buckeye Institute does wonderful research work on these kinds of issues. And so I see you partnering with them as them giving you material that you need to basically make your argument before the Ohio legislature. So, in fact, in time to come, we'll have to have you back on with Greg Lawson of the Buckeye Institute and talk about some of these issues. As we head into Thanksgiving, I know it's near and dear to your heart as it is to mine, charitable contributions, of course, the food banks, the homeless shelters, the Christian outreaches that help across the state of Ohio and help the poor. We know there's a tax deduction on the federal level. Is there a tax deduction on the state level? And what more can be done about that to encourage nonprofit contribution?
I actually think there is, but I think the way it works is that I don't know that there is an explicit deduction on the state level. I think the way it works is you do all your deductions at the federal level, and then that bring that number over to the state taxation, and so you've already gotten the deduction. You get it in at both levels. Okay. I think that's important. Although, Chris, I'm going to honestly say, I think the American people, I think tax deductions of those kinds are important only to people who have means that are beyond my, experience and yours. I think, the Bill Gateses and the Warren Buffetts have tax foundations and have things where they protect their money and their assets from from the government, and they say that they're smarter than the government, know how to spend the money, but we're stupid, and so we should do what the government says. I think people will make contributions based on their knowledge of the need and their willingness to help, much more, not for tax reasons, but because it needs to be done.
Well, this is my good friend Jack Boyle. He is the new executive director of Ohioans for Tax Reform. Jack, thanks for coming on today. We're going to have you back, of course, because there's going to be so much to talk about. I want to say happy Thanksgiving to all the listeners. Remember, rejoice evermore, pray without ceasing, and everything give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus concerning us. God bless you. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. See you next time.
Thank you, Chris.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus us fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
I'm Johnette Cruz, and I'm a busy mom. Then a friend told me about TrustBlueReview.com, a new website powered by the Christian Blue Network. She uses it to find trusted Christian-owned businesses. I checked it out, read the helpful reviews, and found a great family dentist. Now I use TrustBlueReview for all my family's needs. For peace of mind, do what I did. Visit TrustBlueReview.com or download their free mobile app from your app store today.
The trusted source for all you do, TrustBlueReview.
Will my kids like this dentist? Can I trust this mechanic? Who's a good choice for my upcoming remodel? I found businesses I can trust from TrustBlueReview.com.
This company rebuilt our deck and renovated our bathroom. I'd highly recommend them to anyone looking to hire an honest contractor.
The best dentist experience I've ever had.
It's now easy to find trusted businesses in my community that have the same Christian values as my family. It all starts at TrustBlueReview.com or download their app in the App Store today.
The trusted source for all you do. Trust Blue Review.
Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And good afternoon and welcome to this edition of News in Focus. We're glad that you've joined us. This week at the Ohio State House, the Government Accountability and Oversight Committee passed out of committee HCR 10. Those of you that are regular listeners to this program understand that that is a resolution to support the State of Israel and to condemn anti-Semitism on Ohio college campuses. Let me read for you the press release that the Ohio Christian Alliance sent out this week. Today, members of the Ohio legislature took a positive step forward, pushing back against anti-Semitism by passing out of committee HCR 10, the resolution to condemn the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement against Israel, and to condemn increasing incidents of anti-Semitism on Ohio college campuses. You know, unfortunately, there have been incidents of anti-Semitism that have continued on Ohio college campuses. And of course, most recently in Athens, Ohio, at Ohio University. Actually, on the eve of the most holy day on the Jewish calendar, Yom Kippur, Nazi swastikas were drawn on the dormitories and on the sidewalks surrounding the campus. Officials at the university told Representative Andy Thompson that they were investigating the incident, and it is for these reasons that we strongly support HCR 10 and its passage today out of committee, and we're told that sometime in the next few weeks it will be on the House floor for a full vote and consideration. So call your state representative and urge them to support HCR 10, the resolution that supports the State of Israel and condemns anti-Semitism on Ohio college campuses, and we thank you for doing that. You can also learn more at our website at ohioca.org. Well, this week, of course, we celebrate the 500th anniversary of the Reformation, in which Martin Luther nailed the 95 theses on the Wittenberg door. And this, of course, was symbolic of the launch of the Reformation. And this week, our good friend Bill Fetter of the American Minute, he actually put out a couple of emails in his American Minute daily to talk about John Adams and his reference in the American Revolution with the Reformation, and, of course, Martin Luther himself. Bill, welcome to the program.
Chris, great to be with you.
Well, thanks for joining us today, and I really enjoyed your piece on John Adams. In fact, we resent that to our entire state list. I thought that it was so well written and documented of what you spelled out as far as his view of law and morality. Talk to our listeners about that.
Well, the Reformation was a turning point. A little background. The Muslims were invading Greece and destroying museums and libraries and churches and graves and artwork. And so the Greek scholars were fleeing to Florence, Italy,
with all their Greek stuff, including their Greek New Testaments. And so this was called the Renaissance, where Western Europe was rediscovering Greek stuff. But they began to translate the Bible, not just to Latin, but all the way back to Greek. And so Erasmus was the first one to print an entire New Testament from the Greek. And Erasmus was a friend of Martin Luther. And so as they're getting this new interest in original words in the Greek, it laid the foundation for the Reformation. So on October 31st of 1517, Martin Luther nails his 95 debate questions on the door of the Wittenberg Church. That was sort of the bulletin board for the community. And the Reformation starts. Well, he's called to a trial called the Diet of Worms. That would make anybody have indigestion. But the Holy Roman Emperor is Charles V of Spain. He's 21 years old. And he considered it an argument amongst monks. You got a whole lot of monks on one side and this one monk on the other. And so that's when Martin Luther was more or less declared outside of the law. And he was kidnapped. They thought he was going to die, but he was hidden in the Wartburg Castle by Frederick of Saxony there. And that then we see he translates the Bible from the Greek and Latin all the way into the German language. That's the Hochdeutsch dialect as the official language, dialect for Germany. This begins this Reformation. Now, Charles V, as the years go on, he realizes this is serious, but then the Muslims pick up and they conquer, attack Malta in the Mediterranean. They do the Battle of Lepanto. They're conquering. And so Charles V strikes a deal with the Protestants in the year 1555. And the Treaty of Augsburg lets every king decide what's going to be believed in his kingdom. And so he probably thought it was just going to be Catholics and Lutherans. But in the next century, it breaks into this domino effect of Europe where different kings believe different things. And if you didn't believe the way your king did, you fled. Theologically, Martin Luther's movement of focusing back on an individual's reading of the scripture sort of cut out the clergy, and it sort of undermined a hierarchical system that had been in place in Europe, and eventually gave birth to the idea of citizens ruling without a king. I get into that in England a little bit more, but ultimately it came to the colonies. And so if this was this polarity change in the direction of government from a top-down church government, top-down king government, to a bottom-up government. So church-wise, it was called the congregational form of church government, where the congregation got to vote. And then when the pilgrims got blown off course, they were going to go to Jamestown. They were 500 miles off course, and the captain says, it's too dangerous. You're going to have to get off. And they say, well, we don't know who's going to be in charge. There's no king-appointed person on our boat. They do something unique. They apply their congregational church government to their government. It's called the Mayflower Compact, where it says, we in the presence of God covenant ourselves together to form a civil body politic, to enact laws that we think most meet, unto which we promise all due submission. It was revolutionary. The whole world was this divine right of kings. God gives the power to the king. He dispenses it through his appointed administrators. This is, again, a polarity change. It's a bottom up where the people decide who their leaders are going to be and what their laws are going to be. And so this influenced the New England colonies, particularly Connecticut with Thomas Hooker. It's called the Constitution State. And then it influenced the Declaration, where it says government by the consent of the governed, influenced the Constitution, where it's we the people form this to have a more perfect union, right? And so John Adams is acknowledging the role of the Reformation in the founding of America. You know, when they signed the Declaration of Independence, Sam Adams, who's considered the father of the Declaration, he said, this day, I trust, the reign of political Protestantism will commence. Over in England, there was statesman Edmund Burke, and he addresses Parliament in 1775. He says, all Protestantism is a sort of dissent, but the religion most prevalent in our northern colonies is the refinement on the principle of resistance. It is the dissidence of the dissent and the Protestantism of the Protestant religion. And so it's this idea that it's this bottom-up form of government from the church Reformation now applied to the government system. And then John Adams writes about this in his dissertation on canon and feudal law. Canon law was the church law, and then the feudal was the government law in Europe. He said, desire of dominion becomes an encroaching, grasping, restless, and ungovernable power. Tyranny, cruelty, lust was soon adopted by most of all the princes of Europe. The people were held in ignorance till God, in his benign providence, raised up champions who began and conducted the Reformation. From the time of the Reformation of the first settlement of America, knowledge gradually spread in Europe, but especially in England. And in proportion as that increased and spread among the people, tyranny lost strength. So it's like a teeter-totter. As the people became more educated and taking more responsibility for the government, it pulled the power away from a top-down form of government with a king.
Well, in reading from your American Minute from this week, and John Adams was stated in his writings, liberty cannot be preserved without a general knowledge among the people who have a right to knowledge as their great creator, who does nothing in vain, has given them understanding and a desire to know. Rulers are more than trustees for the people, and if the trust is insidiously betrayed or wantonly trifled away, the people have a right to revoke the authority and to constitute abler and better trustees. This is from John Adams' writings and what you were talking about this week. So without question, Bill, the Reformation and the spirit of evangelicalism had a very intertwined within our founding as an American republic.
Well, it is, and it's actually pretty simple. So if you can imagine a spectrum of power, one side is total government, the other side is no government. Total government, you get a king who rules by fear. No government is anarchy. No government unless the people have internal morals. It's like everybody downloads a behavioral app on their iPhone. Instead of telling them where to turn in their car, it tells them how to act every day. But wait a second. Why would you follow an internal moral? What would motivate you to restrain yourself from a selfish temptation? Ancient Israel introduced into the world the key ingredient. A God who is watching everyone, he wants you to be fair, and he is going to hold you accountable in the future. So you're about to steal, nobody's around, and then you think, God is watching me, he wants me to be fair, he's going to hold me accountable in the future. Maybe I should hesitate stealing. And it creates something in the back of your head called a conscience. If everybody in the country believes this, you can maintain complete order with no policeman following everybody around. Maximum liberty. Now, it only works with the God of the Bible. An Islamic Allah God says there's an infidel woman there, nobody's around, you can rape her, it's okay. The God of the Bible says, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. So our form of government without a king depends on the people being educated and having morals, but what motivates them to follow those morals is this God of the Bible. It's the sunlight that it provides the solar energy for the plant of freedom to grow, is this consciousness of accountability to God.
Well, that's right. No wonder John Adams stated, our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate for the governance of any other. You know, reading from your email this week again, Adams stated in the dissertation on the canon of feudal law, let us study, he says, the great examples of Greece and Rome, the conduct of our British ancestors who have defended for us the inherent rights of mankind against foreign and domestic tyrants and usurpers, against arbitrary kings and cruel priests, in short, against the gates of earth and hell. Let the pulpit, he says, resound with the doctrines and sentiments of religious liberty. Your thoughts?
Well, he points out the pulpits resounding. And so they understood in America, the people are the king. And even the Pew Forum, P-E-W, Pew Forum, a few years ago, did a poll and identified that 70% of Americans identify themselves as Christian. Now, 20 years ago, it was 90%, but still 70% is a majority. And so if the majority of the people are, the country's ruled by the people, the majority of the people are Christian, that means they go to church, which makes the pastors in America, in a sense, counselors to the king. And so you have two types of counselors. One tells the king to go to sleep, shirk his responsibility, close his eyes, just be irresponsible. Another set of counselors comes in and throws a bucket of ice water on his congregation and says, wake up. You don't just have the right to vote in America. You're going to be held accountable to God for what happens in America. You are the king. And so people say, well, I need somebody to tell me what to do. Since when does the king sit on his throne and say, can somebody tell me what I'm supposed to do here? Hey, butler, come here. What am I supposed to do? It's like, no, it's your job to hear from God, get educated on the issues, and you tell your representatives what needs to happen. And the shoe's on the other foot. The responsibility is on us, the people's shoulders. I used a little example. Imagine visiting a king in the Old Testament, and you're going through the streets of Jerusalem, and you're witnessing murder, rape, and crime. You finally get into the king's chamber, and he looks up all worried at you, and he says, did you see all that crime coming in here? I wish somebody would fix it. And you reach over and tap the king on the shoulder and say, excuse me, you're the king. You're the one that's supposed to fix it. That's like somebody in America watching TV, seeing all the terrible stuff going on, saying, I wish somebody would fix it. Hello, reach through the TV tube and tap you on the shoulder. You're the king. You're the one accountable to God to fix this mess.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
Will my kids like this dentist? Can I trust this mechanic? Who's a good choice for my upcoming remodel? I found businesses I can trust from TrustBlueReview.com.
This company rebuilt our deck and renovated our bathroom. I'd highly recommend them to anyone looking to hire an honest contractor.
The best dentist experience I've ever had.
It's now easy to find trusted businesses in my community that have the same Christian values as my family. It all starts at TrustBlueReview.com or download their app in the App Store today.
The trusted source for all you do. Trust Blue Review.
You're listening to News in Focus, a broadcast of the Ohio Christian Alliance. With us on the phone is author and historian Bill Fetter. In fact, Bill will be leading our tour of the Return to Plymouth. In just 3 years, it will be the 400th anniversary of the Pilgrims Landing at Plymouth Rock, Massachusetts. And later this summer in 2018, the Ohio Christian Alliance will be sponsoring a tour to Plymouth Rock and also Freedom Trail in Boston, Massachusetts. If you'd like more information, you can go to our website at Ohio Christian Alliance or ohioca.org. You can just click on the contact information. Let us know that you're interested in joining us. We'll be taking a charter bus from Ohio to Plymouth, and we'll have reservations there. We'll give you all the information, but Bill Fetter will be helping us lead the tour, and we're going to have a great time really returning to Plymouth Rock and also walking Freedom Trail in Boston, Mass. Bill, again, continuing with this week and celebrating the 500th anniversary of the Reformation and Martin Luther. And of course, there were so many great church reformers. I was listening to Pastor Erwin Lutzer of Moody Broadcasting, who was talking about the great church reformers of John Knox and John Huss, and so many who actually gave their lives, John Wycliffe, who gave their lives for the truth of the gospel and for the liberty in Christ. And I love what you put together this week of how it had such a bearing on our nation's founding, and with John Adams himself, who was a committed Christian and dedicated to the scriptures as well. Go on with your thoughts.
Well, there's an interesting study done by a Robert Woodbury, and he compared the countries where missionaries went to in the 19th century and how those countries were in the 20th century regarding prosperity and freedom. And he found a direct connection between where what he called conversionary Protestant missionaries went to. They educated the common people to read and to read the Bible. And when you read the Bible, you see these parables where Jesus tells the unjust guy, because he buried his talent rather than working to multiply it, and talks about being honest and so forth. And so it caused there to be a literate populace. Those countries rose and today are more have more freedom and more prosperity. So some missionaries, what he called Protestant conversionary missionaries, wanted to educate the populace. But other missionaries just wanted to educate the upper class, and it caused there to be a the same social pyramid, social structure in place. So they went from worshiping their pagan gods, but it was hierarchical, to now they're Christian, but it's still hierarchical. But so the concept that the Reformation causes the people to be able to read the Bible in their own language, that is a statistically documented phenomenon, that where the Protestant missionaries went to, they educated everyone to read, and those countries today are more prosperous. So again, it's this idea that the Reformation gave birth to the individual being personally responsible to God.
Well, that's right, and it was John Wycliffe who basically was putting the Bible in the common people's hands. And they were going around the countryside and passing out New Testaments. Of course, the Catholic Church persecuted him for it and were trying to corral him. But he continued by dispersing the Word of God as far as he could during his lifetime.
Right. It's interesting when you study the English Bible. Wycliffe, in the 1300s, it was all hand-copied, because they had not invented the printing press yet, right? Gutenberg was 1450 when he invented it. And so every single copy of Wycliffe's New Testament was hand-copied. Imagine that. And so when he was persecuted, they would round up those copies and burn them. John Huss did a similar thing in Prague when he translated scriptures into the Czech language. But once Luther comes along, his writings now can be mass-printed. It's sort of like he's taken advantage of a Twitter account. Instead of funneling stuff through the controlled media, he's immediately communicating with the people. Everybody gets to read the scriptures, and it undermined the social structure that all these elites had had in place for a millennium.
Well, it's so hard for people to understand today, because we have so much access to libraries, to online knowledge. Someone just has to do a search engine for any kind of topic, and it comes up instantly on their cell phone, their tablet, their desktop computer. But, you know, back in the times in which we're talking, only the literate and educated were able to have access even to writings. You know, reading the autobiography of Benjamin Franklin this summer, every book he could get his hands on, he would borrow books. And, of course, he thought that for our nation to be a nation born in that knowledge and freedom, it needed a library system. So he began actually a library exchange in Greater Boston. So, you know, you can see where these things were developed, of where knowledge was expounded upon and in the pursuit of knowledge. And, the Bible says, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. And so, you know, there's great freedom and liberty in Christ, and the Lord wants us to know things, but there were those who were trying to keep the people under by keeping information from them. Your thoughts?
Well, you're exactly right. You know, I wanted to pick up with the storyline. After Martin Luther, you have 100,000 Muslims surrounding Vienna, Austria. And we begin to see that as the Muslims are encroaching on Western civilization, it moves further to the West. And they, again, had the Battle of Lepanto, the largest battle ever on the Mediterranean Sea. And Spain was using the gold from the New World to fight the Muslims, which is a good thing, right? It saved Western Europe.
In fact, wasn't it Martin Luther that called for prayer for Europe, because the Muslim threat of this This armada that was about to land in southern Europe was threatening, these Muslims were threatening to overrun Europe. And Martin Luther called for the church to pray. Is that not right?
He did, and as also John Calvin did the same thing. But then after they stopped the Muslims at the Battle of Lepanto, 1571, rather than freeing the rest of the Mediterranean from Muslim control, Spain decided to take its invincible armada and squash the Reformation in England. And then they sent their what's called Spanish Furies. They sent the Iron Duke, the Duke of Alba, who just had his men rape and pillage all throughout Holland. Took an 80-year war of independence for Holland to get free of Spain. But it was the Queen Elizabeth who was there in England, and she has her Sir Walter Raleigh and Sir Francis Drake, and she gives her famous speech in 1588. I know I'm just a woman, but she said, I have the heart and stomach of a king and a king of England, too, and I'll not let any king of Spain or European monarch invade my realm. And anyway, they stop the Spanish, and that's when the Spanish Armada is smashed in a hurricane and opens up the rest of America to colonization by the Europeans, and particularly the English.
We've come to the end of our program. Listen, Bill, thank you so much. It's so awesome that we could spend so much time with you. Give your website again for folks to visit, the American Minute.
Thank you, Chris. My website's AmericanMinute.com.
Thanks, Bill, for being on the program, and we'll be talking to you soon. And then again, folks, if you'd like to join us on our trip, Return to Plymouth with Bill Fetter, we'll have more information and details of how you can register for that in the summer of 2018. We hope that you can join us. God bless. You've been listening to the Ohio Christian Alliance broadcast, News in Focus. We'll catch you next time. God bless.
You have been listening to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. To learn more about the issues that matter most to you and your family, visit online at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org. Thank you for listening. This program is sponsored by the Ohio Christian Alliance of Akron, Ohio.